and welcome to the Therapeutic Teaching Podcast. I'm Shahana Knight, the founder of TPC Therapy and the creator of the Therapeutic Schools Award and the Therapeutic Teaching Course. And every week I'll be talking about all things related to well-being and mental health in schools. Think of this podcast as your weekly dose of inspirational goodness to go out there and make a real difference in the lives of the children that you're working with. Each week will be full of innovative ideas, inspirational stories, practical guidance, and even some freebies so that we can actually redefine what school should be for the children of today. You have so much power to make some real changes, so let me show you how. I'm so glad you found me here. Let's jump right in. Hi everyone, welcome to another podcast episode. So today, if you're watching on YouTube, it's gonna look slightly different, and I'm really sorry about that, but I'm actually recording from inside my caravan today because I have builders in the house taking out the bathroom. So if you hear banging and a lot of shoveling and other things like that, that's the reason why. And that's why the camera angle is slightly strange, because today it's just balanced. However, it's still got great content, so please bear with me. Also, I just wanted to say before I started today's episode how thankful I am for you all. Thank you so, so much for listening to this podcast. I was at a point where I was like, no one is even listening to this. And then I went onto the statistics for the podcast and found that actually there's quite a lot of people listening to this podcast, which is amazing. And people have started to email me now as well to say thank you and to explain how it's helped them in their roles. And people have been tweeting about the podcast as well. So thank you so, so much for all of your support. It just spurs me on. I'm going to do more and more and more. And it just makes me feel so, so good to know that they're actually having the impact that I wanted. So please share far and wide and continue to support me. I'm so thankful. Okay, so today we're going to look at how you approach a child who's kicking off. Now, I'm going to use the term kicking off because that's the term that I hear quite a lot when I'm in schools. So teachers will say, I was kicked off again today, or he's had a massive meltdown. And what I want to do is unpick why children are having meltdowns and then what you can do to help them. So this is linking to behaviour management strategies, but it's coming from a therapeutic approach. So the first thing I want you to think about is the type of children that you are with in schools at the moment who are kicking off. So what is happening? Are you experiencing children who do get really angry when you say no? They get really frustrated and they get cross, they walk away, they run away. Do you get children who physically fight? So they're getting into fights with their friends when things maybe don't go their way. Are you having children who are unable to manage their emotional state when things are tricky, when things are challenging, like, for example, when they're doing their work? So there's lots and lots and lots of different things that can cause a child to have a meltdown or a kickoff. And what I want you to do is to think about what that might be. So that's going to help you to just think about particular children that you know within your school environment, or if you're in care listening to this, or if you are a professional working with other children and other young people, I want you to just imagine a few scenarios that you've already experienced in your head when you listen to this podcast episode today. So the first thing that we do whenever we think about a child who's having a meltdown or a kickoff is to first think about why. It's so easy to focus all of our attention on the child's behaviour. So have they pulled down a display? Have they hurt somebody else? Did they spit? Did they swear? Have they done something that you deem to be absolutely horrendous and absolutely not okay? And therefore, because it's not okay, you cannot allow for that thing to have taken place. Well, what we're doing is often we get our emotional responses, which become part of the sort of mix of everything that's going on with that child. And often it's really, really easy to focus on our emotional response and the behaviour the child's displayed. And because we're focusing so much of our attention on the behaviour, we're trying to resolve the behaviour, stop the behaviour, have a better or more desired behaviour. And because of that, we are forgetting about the reason why the child has had or displayed that behaviour in the first place. And the behaviour is very often a feeling. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that's come from something that's hard or tricky. And what we do in society, wherever you are, however you work with children, is we often make children feel guilty for struggling with a feeling and for struggling with something that's quite emotional. And we forget that's part of their developmental age. In fact, we all struggle with our feelings and behaviour, no matter how old we are. You know, you can be an adult and still have a kickoff or a meltdown. I mean, we see that all the time. But what we do is, with children, is we don't give them the understanding, and we don't give them the permission to learn about how to manage their emotions and their feelings. We don't give them permission to struggle or to not be okay. In fact, we punish them for that. We tell them that's not all right. We tell them it's not okay. We make them feel guilty for struggling, when actually our role should be that we're helping to guide the children through those things that are really difficult, with the awareness that this is part of their development. You know, it's really hard for them to understand all these emotions, all these feelings that are coming up, and to work through them in a way that's healthy, in a way that's going to have resolution, in a way that means that they are doing it from a place of empathy for other people, etc., etc. All of these skills that we want them to have. What we forget is they're not just born with those skills, they have to be taught. And very often, children that come into school particularly haven't been taught those things. They haven't had a caring adult guide them through their feelings. They haven't had a caring adult explain why they feel that way. And so because they feel that way, they've behaved like X, Y, and Z, and that these are the things you could have done instead, or even had a child, an adult around them that calmed them down first to help them to understand how to deal with the problem. Those things very often for these children and young people haven't even happened. So when they come into school, or when they come into your environment, wherever your environment might be, you're expecting this child or young person to have already had those building blocks as they were growing, and actually they probably haven't. So when you're in school, when you've got your class and you've got a particular child that kicks off every single day, I want you to think about the why. First of all, why is this child kicking off? Keeping in mind that they probably haven't been given any support for dealing with it. Why is this child kicking off? So think about their background if you know it. Have they got a history of rejection? Have they been in care? Is the reason why they're kicking off because you've just told them that they can't do something? And actually, being told no is a trigger. It's something that they find really, really difficult. And so the very act of being told no means that it's reminding them of all the times in the past where they've not been able to do something. They've not been able to eat. They've not been able to go to bed when they want to. They've not been able to escape the thing that's really caused them pain. Is it that that child is in a game and everyone's playing with them, but no one's listening to their ideas? Well, what's the why behind that? Is the actual issue for that child abandonment issues? Have they experienced loss? Has somebody passed away? Has somebody left the family home? Have they had parents who've divorced? Well, if so, if that was quite traumatic for them, then this scenario with their friends is reinforcing that loss. Yet again, they're being abandoned. Yet again, their friends don't want to play with them. They've all walked off and left me. So it's uprooting and highlighting things that are already an issue. And we see this with children time and time and time again in school. And what we're not doing is unpicking why that might be. We're just seeing a child get very, very angry about the fact that certain children aren't playing with them. So they've gone over and pulled somebody's hair and spat in their face. And then we tell them off for that behavior. We get angry about that behavior. You spat in someone's face. How dare you spit in someone's face? That's disgusting. We don't spit in people's faces. Instead of, here's a child who feels abandoned yet again. They've experienced abandonment all of their life, and now they feel abandoned again because they can't play this role. That's bringing a load of things up for this child, and they're feeling really anxious and they're feeling really unsettled. How can I help them, guide them through this? Rather than, how can I stop this behavior? How can I punish them for this behavior? So that's what I want you to start to think about. Start to think about your train of thought in a therapeutic way. So it needs to be, how can I help guide this child and teach this child, rather than how can I punish this child and stop this behavior, which is how we tend to approach things in society at the moment. So the first thing is thinking about the how. Now, the why. Now, you're not always going to know the why. You're not always going to know that Jack has experienced abandonment. And that's fair enough. You know, you might say to me, well, actually, Shahana, we don't get that information. And that's okay. You know, not everybody will get the information about the child's potential trauma. But what you do know, and what you can notice, is how that is affecting their feelings and their behavior and the trigger. Now, remember, we talked about triggers in a previous podcast episode. Triggers can be anything from a thing, like a man with a beard, or having to go into the bathroom. I know somebody who has a real trigger around black toilets. They're not white toilets in school, but black toilets in school, because the black toilet reminds them of an event that was really difficult for them. So it might be something along the lines of that. It might be a feeling. The trigger might be the feeling of abandonment. So you can see where I'm going with this. So you might not know that Jack's experienced abandonment, but you might know that Jack's parents are divorced. You might know that Jack really struggles whenever people leave him out of something, or whenever he can't do something, and whenever he feels rejected, and that must be his trigger. And you've got to start to think about those things. What might Jack's trigger be? Maybe Jack, in all these scenarios, because I know Jack, because I've been teaching him for a year, I've been teaching him for, you know, 6 months, I know Jack really well, and I've also known his history in other classes with other teachers. Generally, this is the thing that he struggles with. What might that be? The first thing is to try and unpick that. You might not get it right. You might not know. But to even just to try and think about that is the first step to actually making a difference. Because the more you can get into the child's brain, the more you can think about their frame of reference, the more empathy you're going to have, and the more awareness you're going to have when you come to tailoring your response. And that's really what it's about. And I'll tell you this now, and I'm sure lots of you know this, which is why you like this podcast, but children's behavior is only ever a symptom of how they are feeling or something they are struggling with. Children are not bad. They are not born bad. They are not being bad to be bad because they want to be bad. It's a cry for help. And you've got a choice whenever a child is struggling with their behaviour. You can either help them to understand how that behaviour isn't the best way to deal with it and to listen to the cry for help and help. Or you can listen to the cry for help and make them feel guilty for having a need, for needing help, in which case they're going to learn very quickly to stop asking. They're going to learn very quickly to swallow those feelings down. And that's where we see young people start to take drugs or start to have partners that maybe aren't very good for them, or getting into lots of sexual relationships as a young girl, for example, or even as a young boy, where actually they're not healthy relationships, but it's about needing something. A lot of the time, the behaviours that they start to develop are avoidant behaviours because they can't focus on their feelings, because every time they've tried, somebody shut them down. And you can only go so far with that pattern. Somebody rejects you 50, 60, 70 times for behaving in a certain way, and you come to learn very quickly that those people don't actually care about what's going on for you. What they care about is the damage you've caused, and that's really all they focus on. And the more that we continue that script and that pattern for these children and young people, the more likely it is they will turn to drugs and alcoholism and sex and smoking and all these other addictive things, because it's taking them away from something that they feel like they've got absolutely no control over. What we need to do is teach them that they have got control over that, and we need to teach them how to have control over that. And behavior management is what we call it. I don't really like that phrase, but behavior management in school, behavior policies, that's the way we need to do that. It's not about stopping the behavior. It's about listening to why the child's behaving that way in the first place. So, just taking it back, because I'm going off on a tangent, you can see that this is something I'm really passionate about. So first of all, think about the background, then think about what the trigger might be. So like I said, you know, is the trigger the feeling of loss? And I want you to then think about the feeling. So what is the feeling this child is having? So even if you're struggling with the first two things, you don't know his background and you're not great about understanding triggers, that's okay. You can identify his feeling. There's a million feelings out there. Is the feeling that he feels anxious? Does he feel alone? Does he feel unlistened to? Does he feel unheard, unsupported? Does he feel afraid or worried? Does he feel like he's not worthy, actually, to do this really wonderful thing? And so he's going to sabotage it because he doesn't feel like he's actually worthy of having the good thing in the first place. There's so many feelings. We are not just angry, happy, and sad. And often when we tell children about how they feel, we focus so much of our attention on being angry or sad or happy. And there's so many more feelings we need to give them the vocabulary for so that they can start to be aware of those feelings. And also for yourself. I say this quite a lot in my training, but you know, you can sit down and write out a page full of feelings, and then you've got words to use when you're speaking to the children about how they feel that you might not otherwise have got, because you've actually been intentional and sat down and thought about all the different types of feelings there are. And that's really helped me when I became a therapist, because it gave me the opportunity to be able to really sort of key into the children's emotional experiences in therapy. Okay, so let's have a think about that feeling in a bit more detail. So what I'm asking you to do here is to not see Jack, and I know I'm talking about Jack, but I think it's good to have a child in our mind, and this can happen with boys or girls at any age, doesn't matter what age you are. If you're working with 21-year-olds, it still applies. But let's think about Jack for a minute. So I don't want you to think about Jack's feeling and go, he's feeling angry because his teacher's not in, because that's not quite getting it. What I want you to think is he's anxious because his teacher isn't in. Yeah, he's anxious about the fact that his teacher's not there. He's not angry and frustrated and kicking off because he can't have his teacher and he wants his teacher and he won't be taught by anyone else. He's anxious about the fact that now he has to trust someone else. Now he has to be in a room with someone else. He doesn't know that person. He's not aware of that person. That person doesn't really make him feel safe. He doesn't do well with change. The feeling behind that is anxiousness, it's anxiety. So that's what I'm asking you to do. So again, you know, you might have a young girl called Sarah, and maybe Sarah is really struggling with the rules. And so every time you ask her to do something, she says no. So you ask her to line up, she doesn't do it. You ask her to be respectful when she's talking, but she swears every day. And so you might think, okay, well, you know, she's really struggling with the class rules. But the feeling is that actually she's struggling to trust someone else to have the power. She's very worried about letting someone have the power. She's nervous. She's feeling, again, really anxious. Anxiety is one that comes up quite a lot. She might be feeling frustrated that somebody's trying to take her power. So you've got to think outside the box here. Maybe she's been in a family where she's had to be the one that is the caretaker. Maybe her family was very vulnerable. Maybe mum and dad couldn't take care of the children. Maybe I know lots of families who have had this experience and then they've been taken into care. And then when they're in care, the older sibling is the one that looks after all the younger siblings. When that older sibling is in school, very often they struggle to give up their power because that is what they have survived with. That's how they survive. I'm the one that's in control. I'm the one that has the power. I need to keep this power in control because if I don't, that means I'm giving it to an adult who could take it away at any point, who could let us down again, who could make us feel unsafe. And so I can't do that. So I'm going to make my own rules. I'm going to follow my own rules and I'm not going to follow your rules. And that's why a lot of children defy even the basic bits of rules in school, because by following your rule, that means they're giving you the power. They're giving you the trust more than the power, the trust. And they can't do that. So maybe the feeling is a feeling of real mistrust and real fear about handing over the power. So you need to start to unpick the feeling. And the feelings might not be as complex as that. It might just be that you can identify that somebody is feeling really unsure about the work and they're worried. They're really worried that they're not good enough. Maybe it's a child who is in a group of friends and no one's listening to their ideas and the feeling is that they feel unheard. Those feelings will always, 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 if they've resulted in a big behavioural outburst, they'll always have a trigger with them. So it's more likely than not that when that child feels that certain feeling, that's when they're triggered. So always focus on the feelings. Once you know your feeling, you can reflect back then, and you can use reflective therapeutic language. So again, instead of focusing on the behaviour, so instead of saying, Jack, you've just kicked and punched somebody because you didn't win a game of football, and then we do not kick, we do not punch, you best go to Mrs. Jackson's office, you're on thinking time, you're on timeout, or you've got a red card, or even you've just spit, you're on detention, you're going to have to go and have detention, or even exclusion. All of those ways of managing the behaviour are punishing Jack for having a feeling and for not knowing how to deal with that feeling at 8 years old. When Jack's had a history of no one guiding him, no one teaching him, no one being emotionally available, and yet you expect Jack to know what to do when he's lost a football game and someone's told him he's no good at football. That isn't fair on Jack. And actually rejecting him, sending him away, making him feel not good enough, telling him that he is now going to be rejected for that behaviour, is only telling Jack that you don't care about his feelings. You only care about his behaviour. You only care that he kicks someone. And yet again, he's going to feel unheard. He's going to feel unloved. He's going to feel devalued. So we have to think about this from a different point of view. So that's when you can start to use reflective language. Instead of saying those things to Jack, you're then going to say to Jack, so if he's kicked someone, you might say, Jack, you're feeling really attacked right now. You feel like Abdul was attacking you, saying that you weren't good enough, and that made you really angry, or that made you very frustrated. And when you're frustrated, you kick people because you're not quite sure what else to do. That is reflective. And Jack will go,
Yeah, I am angry. I am frustrated. And I do feel like that. That's exactly how I feel. And so then you've made a connection with Jack. Instead of a disconnection where you've sent him away because you don't like what he's done, you've acknowledged his feelings and you've told him what they are. So he can now reflect on that and start to have some insight into what is going on for him internally. And then the next step is to help him through that. So you don't just do reflective language. And again, obviously, we can go into a lot more detail about this. This is just an overview for the podcast, and hopefully it will really help. But I'm trying not to get too deep into all the nitty-gritty parts of it, because there's lots of other things that you can do. But you've got to extend that. Once you've done your reflective language, you've got to extend that. I'm going to ask you a question now, and I want you to have a think about this. When you pull a child up for their behaviour, what is the point? Why are you doing that? Why are you telling that child off in the first place? I would hazard a guess that it's because you're trying to teach them. So you've gone over to Jack because Jack has spat at somebody and kicked somebody. And yes, you want to help them through the situation, but you are also trying to teach them about how they can do it better next time. But I think we lose that. I think actually when we go over, we just want to stop it. We've started to just want to stop it. We want to stop it, put plaster over it, and get the behaviour to be done and dusted with because we don't like it. And actually the goal when we tell children off should always be that we want to teach them. We're trying to teach them a better way. We're trying to help them to understand that that isn't the best way to deal with it when you're angry, when you feel unheard, or when someone's told you that you're not good enough. The best way to deal with that is to do X, Y, and Z. So they need to be guided through that. They need to be taught. So whenever you approach a behaviour where a child's had a kickoff, you need to think in the back of your mind, I need to teach this child. This is another learning experience. Just like when they were in maths this morning, this is just as, if not more important, as a learning tool than anything else this child could learn today in school. So reflective language helps with that. You start off, you explain their feeling, you tell them their feeling, you're angry, you're frustrated, you're sad, you're cross, you feel unheard, you felt like no one was listening to you, you felt like you're a bit anxious because you don't really know this teacher. All of those things you just constantly tell the children all of the time. That's going to build up their self-awareness, it's going to build up their knowledge and their language skills around feelings and their emotional intelligence. So powerful, and we don't do it enough. The second thing is to extend that. So what I would say to you at this point is, if Jack is still angry, if Jack is still frustrated, if he's run away from you and then you go over and he's punching and kicking, or he's banging his head on the wall and he's obviously really, really angry, you can't teach in that moment. Jack, right then, is in survival brain. And we've talked about survival brain before. So he is literally in fight, flight, and freeze. He's obviously in fight mode if he's kicking and punching and spitting at people. And now he's in fight mode with you because you don't get it either. You don't care either. You're also attacking him. And when you are in survival mode, it feels like everyone's attacking you. So he's gone into survival mode and you're making survival mode even worse because you are also attacking him, is what his brain will think. If you go over and start to say to Jack, right, Jack, we don't kick people in this school. We don't spit at people in this school. You need to go and say sorry to Abdul. You also then need to go over to Miss Jackson because you're having time out this afternoon. Jack's not listening. Jack is hearing rejection, 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 attack, attack, attack. And Jack is literally going to push you away, either physically with his body and with his arms and his legs, because he is so afraid in that moment. He is overwhelmed with feelings, or he's going to run away from you, or he's going to shut down and not listen to you anymore. And he'll let you do whatever you want to do, but he's not listening and he's not learning anything. And the whole point of approaching a child about their behavior is to get them to learn something. So instead, you need to give Jack the time to calm down that survival brain and get back into rational brain. When we're in rational brain, we can think, we can problem solve, we can have empathy for others, we've got better reasoning in terms of, okay, I understand that this person's trying to help me. And you remember, your memory is on. So I say this 1,000 times in my training, over and over and over again. It's such a small, simple bit of science, but it's relevant to every single thing you do in education and everything that we do with children. Your goal in that moment, in that very first few seconds of going to deal with Jack, is to get his empathy going, because you connect with his feelings, you tell him how he feels, and then to get him into rational brain as quick as you can. Now, some children will go into rational brain when you reflect. And they'll go, oh yeah, I do feel really angry. This person understands me, and they start to calm down. Some people, some children don't have that luxury because their survival mode is so kind of prevalent. They're so geared up to survive because of their history, that they're not coming out of that for a while. So what you need to do is to help. So the second port of call there for him is to actually start to teach him how to self-regulate. I know you want to deal with the behaviour. I know you want to tell Jack off. I know he needs to go and have a sanction. I know that he's spit at someone and he's kicked someone, and that is not okay. And I'm not saying that's okay. But what I am saying is he's not learning anything if you do all of those things while he is in survival mode. He's just going to do it again and again and again. And that's why you have children like Jack who go through year 3, year 4 and year 5 completely struggling the whole way through because no one's changed their approaches. So what you need to do is help him to start to self-regulate. Now this sounds like, for some of you, you might start thinking, this sounds like a reward to me. It's not a reward. It's a teaching mechanism. In this moment, I would be saying to Jack, right, Jack, you need to come. Your brain is in survival mode. You are really stressed. You are really angry and you need to help calming down. And then I'd be saying, right, come on, we're going to have some calm time. Not time out, not punishment and rejection, calm time. And that calm time should be with you available and present. If you are dealing with a behavioral incident, you've got to see it all the way through to the end. There's no point in going to get somebody else because all you're teaching Jack is that you can't handle it. You need to be able to see it all the way through so that he learns, I can trust this adult. This adult is in it for me. This adult cares about me and wants to help me and is supporting me, unlike every other adult I've experienced in my life up until this point. So you are the difference. The more that you can start to do things that are different for Jack, the more that you will change the brain pathways in his actual brain, because he's expecting you to reject him, but you don't. He's expecting you to go and get someone else because you're too busy, but you don't. And so slowly but surely, the more you do this, and you do have to do this regularly, like, you know, it might be that you've done this 10 times with Jack in a week, but he's going to start to learn. And slowly his behaviours will change, and slowly he'll stop having as many meltdowns because he's starting to trust you. But you're almost becoming a parent here. It's therapeutic parenting styles, almost, because that is what he needs. So let's think a little bit more about what I mean about calm time and regulation. So we want to teach Jack how to regulate. Jack doesn't know how to regulate. No one's taught him. Regulate, self-regulation, is where you calm yourself down and you can turn your own rational brain on. So you know that you are cross. You can identify your feelings, even if you can't quite control them in that moment. We all get really angry. We all get really frustrated. We all might have an argument, but you have got the self-control to step back, to say, no, I'm not doing this. Remove yourself and then put something in place that you need to calm yourself down and start to self-regulate. It might be that you need to just have 5 minutes. You know that you go into fight mode and you know that you're going to have a big argument. So instead you say, I need to stop this now. We need to stop talking about this now. And that is not a shutdown. That is a right now, all you're going to get from me is fight, fight, fight. I need to go and regulate myself and then I'll come back and have a conversation. Some of you might go into flight mode. You might need to get out. So some of you might need space and time. Like if you're thinking about an argument with somebody that you know, for example, you might need to go, I'm just going to go and have 10 minutes and I'll be back. And you go and you just have some time to breathe, to listen to some music, and then you come back. We afford ourselves those things as adults, but we don't afford them to the children, and we should. So in this scenario with Jack, we need to teach him how to do that. We need to help him. So he needs to know that his survival brain's on, because there's no good us knowing that and he doesn't. How's that going to help him in his future? He needs to know. He also then needs to know that he's struggling to calm down and he needs some help to do that. He's got to learn. So what we'll do is we'll put things in place. Now, I always say to schools that a good way to do this is to have, if you are in the position where you've got a calming room, perfect. Let him go into the calming room, go with him. And let him do things that are going to help him calm down. This doesn't have to be a long-winded thing. It can literally be a 5-minute thing, but he needs to come out of survival brain. So maybe Jack goes to the calm room and does some Lego, for example. And the Lego, the very act of building the Lego and doing the Lego, it's not play. It's not a reward. It's time for his brain to just calm down, start to problem solve with something totally different, start to click back into rational brain, his heartbeat will regulate, his breathing will slow down, he'll start to have his thinking brain come on, and he will feel like he's able to then cope with the problem. So you could have boxes of Lego, calm boxes. You could have boxes of Meccano if you deal with much older children, which is like nuts and bolts. You can have calming colouring books. You can just go, right, okay, Jack, you're really overwhelmed. You're really, really angry right now, and you are in your survival brain, so let's help you calm down. Come on, let's do some calming colouring. And then he can go and sit and just do some colouring. Literally 5 minutes of colouring. It might be that you have, and I really like this idea, that you have an iPad or some sort of device that's already preloaded with relaxing music, and he gets to put on some headphones. The act of putting on some headphones shuts everybody out. And if Jack goes into fight or freeze, he doesn't want you around him anyway. He needs to be in his own headspace. That's why he's running away, or that's why he's fighting. So the act of putting something over his ears gives him this cocoon-like experience where he feels safer. And if he feels safer, then he's more likely to be able to start to calm down. Yeah, so I think that's really, really important. And I like that one, because if we're thinking about children like Jack who are in year 4, 5, and 6, then the idea of having some headphones and some music is actually really appealing. So that's going to help the child to calm down. Once you've got the child to a point where they are regulating themselves, because what you're teaching those children effectively is you just need some time to calm your brain down. Once they're doing that, they'll be able to feel the physical effects of calming their brain down, which means they're going to be more likely to do that in the future when you're not there. So even if you take Jack for a walk and you just go, say, right, okay, let's just go for a little walk around the green. And you go for a walk, no talking, it's not a counselling session, you just go for a walk around the green and he sees nature, takes some deep breaths, it brings his heart rate down, it calms his brain down, and then you deal with the problem. That is a therapeutic response to Jack's needs. Now, it might be that Abdul, the other child, has also got needs, and that's okay. We can reflect that to Abdul as well and explain to him, you know, you feel really hurt, you feel really let down that your friends kicked you and hit you, you feel really sad, but it's Jack that's really needing that guidance. Sounds to me, because Abdul was able to come to you and tell you what happened. He's able to manage his feelings and his behaviours, but Jack obviously can't. So put something in place that helps the children to self-regulate. It is not a reward. It is a teaching device. It's a teaching tool. Once they're able to calm their brain down, you've not only helped them do it for that point of call in that moment, but you're teaching them about how to do that in the future. And the more they do that, the more they'll learn to do that, just like anything else we do with children. So that happens before you do anything else. Now, obviously, Jack has spat, Jack has kicked, and Jack does need a boundary. Now, I need you to think about what your boundaries are here. Do you think, given everything I've explained in these podcasts, that it's appropriate to send Jack to time out? Probably not, because it's just rejection, or to another class, or to get him to write lines, or to write down what happened, or even to come and have a big conversation with Jack about why he did it and what he did and why he didn't do. If you sit down with Jack and you say, right, Jack, what happened? Right, you know that you shouldn't, if you start talking at him, you know that you shouldn't be kicking Abdul. How many times have we talked to you about kicking Abdul before? Abdul's one of your closest friends and you really enjoy spending time with Abdul. It must be really horrible for him to have you spitting in his face. It's pretty disgusting, Jack. And I've seen this so many times. I remember recently, just before lockdown, going to visit a school. And I think it must have been the deputy head, brought a child out of the class and was having a conversation with this child about their behaviour. And she must have hammered him for about 20 minutes. And this poor kid was just sat there like, how much longer do I have to endure this? He was definitely in survival brain. He'd shut down. He wasn't listening to anything she was saying. And she was like, we've had this conversation 3 times this week. And I was thinking, yeah, and it's not working. Having the same conversation with somebody 3 times means that it's not working. He needs a different approach. And being attacked by someone as a means to learn is not helpful. So we've got to think about what our boundaries are. When we have a boundary, that means that's the point of call where something else has to happen. So I'm avoiding using the word sanction here because I don't want to punish the children for having these feelings. But they do need to have a point of call where they know that's the end point. They can't do that again. And there is something that's going to be put in place. Now, there are different types of boundaries, and I'm not going to go into that in this episode, but what I am going to do is say to you that a boundary in this scenario, for example, with Jack, needs to be helping them to learn how to make amends rather than just as a punishment or a plaster for what they've done. So how can they make amends? If you've had a child who's pulled down a display, they'll leave the display on the floor, speak to Jack initially, tell him his feelings, give him some self-regulation time, some time to calm down, and then Jack needs to go and pick up that display. That's his boundary or his sanction. He goes, he picks up the display, and he does his best to put the display back to where it was, or he puts all the bits in the bin. He makes amends for his actions. He's learning to take responsibility for his actions. He's learning to have empathy for what he's done and how that's impacted other people. He doesn't need you talking at him. He just needs to take that responsibility. I had a child once in a class, and you might have heard me talk about this before, who the class had all done like globes, like earth globes, and out of paper mache. And this particular boy was really struggling, really, really struggling. And he went into this classroom and he smashed the globe. Now, the best thing to do would be to ask him to fix the globe. He needed to go back into that room. He needed to take responsibility for that globe. He could even have created a brand new globe. That is a better learning experience. It's a better boundary than just what the teacher did, bless her, and she was a new NQT, but by cleaning it up. So she cleaned it all up for him, and cleaning it all up just means that there's no consequence. Even if he went off and got some sort of sanction, he needed to be able to take responsibility for what he actually did. So what I would ask you to do is to think about in your policies, what are your boundaries? If we ask them to pick up what they've dropped, if we ask them to help put something back together, if we ask them to make amends to somebody. So I'm not saying go over and say sorry, like with Abdul. Saying sorry is just a word. You have to actually feel sorry. It would be much better for you to encourage Abdul and Jack to spend some time together and to say to Jack, do you know what? Why don't you go over to Abdul and ask him if he wants to play with the Lego for a bit? Or why don't you go over to Abdul and at break time later, you and Abdul can do something together, whatever it might be. And then say to Jack, and you know what? Maybe you could say to him that you didn't mean to punch him, but you were really angry. Instead of just say sorry and then walk away. So it's got to be a boundary around actually helping them to learn how to take responsibility for what they've done. And the last part of this puzzle that we're going to talk about today is the last teaching element. So you have taught all the way through this process. You have taught him about his feelings. You have taught him that he has a right to have those feelings and that you acknowledge those feelings. You've taught him how to calm down when he's really struggling, and you've taught him that it's not okay to behave the way he has. Now you need to do the last final bit of the puzzle, which is what do you do next time? Now, very often we get to this part of a behaviour management strategy and we will say to the children blanket statements like, right, I want to see Cam playing for the rest of the afternoon. I want to see nice friends. Use your common sense next time. What do those things mean? Honestly, I mean, I say this so many times in my training, but what do those things mean? If Jack struggled in the first place to be a kind friend when he was cross with something and when he was frustrated with something, you saying, I want to see kind friends, it's not teaching Jack how to do anything differently next time. It's just a blanket statement. There's almost no reason to say it because you're assuming that he knows how to do that, and it's evident that he doesn't know how to do that. So instead, what we need to do is give them specific skills to do next time. So you might say to Jack, okay, Jack, next time Abdul says you're not very good at football, say to him, Abdul, that makes me feel really upset. I'm trying my best at football and you're making me feel like I'm not good enough. Perfect. Jack has got something at his disposal that he can use for the rest of his life that comes from a place of emotional intelligence, and you are feeding that into him. You're telling him what to say. The more you give children these responses, and I call them the next time try response, next time try saying this, or next time do this, or next time say this, that is upskilling your child or young person to actually do something different. Rather than just hammering with them a load of things that you want to say, then giving them a punishment and then expecting them to change the way they behave, you're actually giving them something else. So for example, it might be a child who has just had a big argument with her friends and said that she doesn't want to play with them. So you might say, okay, Sarah, next time say, guys, I'm really frustrated. I feel like I don't want to play with you. I might play with somebody else because you're not listening. That is such a strong next time try statement. Or it might be, I don't know, a child who is struggling with their work and they're getting really sweaty and really hot. And instead of telling you that, they storm off. And you could say, okay, next time try taking 5 deep breaths, reminding yourself that you can totally do this. And if you are struggling, you can always ask for some help. It's okay that you don't know. That is a good next time try. Now, there's loads and loads of more complexities around this, but I hope that has given you some quick go-to techniques, and there are 6 of them there. So I'll just go through them again for you. So the first one is thinking about why the child's behaving that way. The second thing is thinking about the triggers the child might have. Then you want to identify the feelings the child might have and reflect those back in reflective language. Then you need to start to think about, does this child need some regulation time? Not all children do, but does this child need, because they're still kicking off, they're still angry, they're still frustrated, do they need help calming down? If so, they need to have some regulation time. And then it's a boundary, so what boundary do they need? And then you want to teach them. So you need to teach them a next time try statement. All right, I hope that helps. I hope that has been informative, and hopefully it's a different perspective to the one that you're used to doing, which is always my goal. If you try it and it works, please let me know. Email me, tweet me, send me a message, comment below, whatever it is that you can do. Please do let me know, because I would love to hear how these things are working out for you guys. But thank you so much for listening to another episode, and I'll see you again soon. Bye, guys.
I hope you've loved this week's episode of the Therapeutic Teaching Podcast. If you want more help and support to become a therapeutic teacher, but don't know where to start, then head to tpctherapy.co.uk and enrol in my free course now and get started.